You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Night Terrors. I'm Colin from Warwickshire in England.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. The day after our terrors. As we record this, Donald Trump has been elected president. There, we said it. Okay, it's enough. How are you guys doing over there? Feeling better than we are, or?
I just want to ask you two a question, though. And you guys at Star Trek Las Vegas that you haven't mentioned in any of the podcasts since it happened. So, did you get the crumpet flu?
No.
This has been discussed.
Yeah, then. It hasn't. Well, it may or may not have been pushed out yet. Lou is not doing very good on recordings. So yeah, we did discuss this. We didn't get to the crumpets. The trumpets were there.
I'll be renamed Trumpets.
Yeah, the trumpets were
His first thing he does, he'll rename trumpets.
Yeah, they expired. They were no good. But, I felt bad because every time we got back to the hotel, it was, 7, 8, 9 o'clock. So, James' brain was 3 a.m. And so we're just like, oh, that's it. I'll see you tomorrow. And didn't really.
And you need a toaster for crumpets as well.
I still would have tried them without it.
The hotel wasn't particularly well set up for us going to a place and getting them toasted for us.
It was Vegas. You could have gone into the desert and fried them on the rocks.
That's probably true. I managed to get past. I had to declare the crumpets as I'm coming into the country.
Oh, God, I can only imagine that on the form.
You know, anything, sir, do you have anything to declare? He said, yes, technically crumpets. I do. I've got these crumpets. So what is a crumpet, sir?
What?
Well, it's a long story, and I'm glad that you asked. I'm really bringing them over as a way of being able to, get across what this concept is to a friend of mine. So, please, all you security guards, kind of gather around, and I'll tell you the story of the crumpet.
While everyone else is beyond you in the queue going, God, will you just hurry up already?
Uh-huh. It's all about Dr. Pulaski. She's the one that started the whole thing. All right. But anyway, how have you guys been?
I've been good. I'm glad we finally got to do this because we've had a few problems getting it all together, but I'm glad we got here eventually.
And I'm worried that it's going to be worse with this Wednesday, Thursday. I don't know how this is going to work, but the other thing I could do is if I can be done by 2 o'clock on Saturday or Sunday, enough time, or 2:30, enough time for me to get ready for work and head out. So that's 2:30 is 7:30 your guys' time. So that's gonna be difficult for James but I don't know. That's finishing, not start time. Finish. No, 2:30. Make that 8:30.
Time traveling. Hey, dude, ask me how I'm doing.
James?
Yep?
Hey, bud, how have you been doing lately? How are you?
Well, today I am surviving, truthfully, I'm surviving on 70 minutes sleep over the last 2 days.
Wow.
You see, I was an idiot. So I did a full day at work yesterday. I came home, and I got home around 9-ish or so. Actually, I think a little bit later than that. Spent time with the family. Everyone went off to bed, and I thought, oh, I'm going to watch the US election because I'm an idiot. So I started watching this, and then very quickly you realize that there's nothing coming in until 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night. But somehow they managed to have a relatively decent episode of Live at the Apollo on BBC Two, which got me through, and then iPlayer was there as well. So I'm up at around midnight or so. It gets to the point where I think I fall asleep around 1, or wake up around 10 past 2. Now, by this point, I think the writing's on the wall. The writing was on the wall enough that by 5 o'clock I had to get up and head into work because, yes, people were expecting Armageddon. And I've basically gone through since what day is it today? Since Tuesday morning. So I have a very soft part of my heart dedicated to this night terrors and people not being able to sleep, or indeed, people heading towards insanity. I think it's well played and very appropriate.
Okay. Well then, why don't we go ahead and get the synopsis running then?
Yeah, so if you hear snoring noises, we know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, the synopsis for tonight's show is the Enterprise crew is affected when they are adrift in a remote area of space and find themselves unable to dream. This is the 17th episode of Season 4 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is March the 18th, 1991. It is written by Cherie Goodhart, directed by Les Landau. Guest stars include Rosalind Cho as that woman, Keiko.
Mm-hmm.
John Vickery as Adriscay. Duke Muskeekan, I'm sure I've said that wrong, as Gillespie. Craig Hurley as Peoples. I can't talk. Brian Tochi as Kenny Lynn. Lanny Chapman as Sally Outrager. Colin Meaney as Miles O'Brien, who had peeps on, in case, I noticed that he had peeps on. Deborah Taylor as the dead body. It's me, I'm the telly. I'm the one under the sheets.
The one who's pulling out her hair.
Yeah, and Whoopi Goldberg as Guinan, the woman with a very, very big gun.
Yeah. What is she compensating for?
Yes, but it balances out with the hat.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think about this episode?
What do you about you first?
I think do James first before he nods off.
James, wake up! Wake up! All right, what about you first?
I like it. I think there's some really funny moments in it that aren't supposed to be funny. Like Deanna doing Superman. But I did like it. And I also like the fact that a Tiger's Rift is named after someone that's not a human. Because all too often these things that pop up in Star Trek are named after humans. So it's nice to see they're named after something, after someone who was not a human. I did like that. But there's some wacky moments in it. There's some funny moments in it. And I'm sure the Doc's going to have a lot of problem with the science. So it should be an interesting discussion, to say the least.
Yeah. What about that, James?
So I think this episode's just a big bag of stupid. But it's really quite good, I find. I watched this episode and you kind of switch. I mean, it doesn't matter. A lot of these things, it doesn't matter that they get the science wrong or if you have problems with people, falling asleep and kind of floating up through a tunnel over towards, two light bulbs. I actually find this episode to be really quite good, and I enjoy it. I enjoy it far too much than I should. It's not a good, it's not a perfect episode or anything like that. But I'm not going to complain about it that much, I don't think.
What was that? Okay, well...
Hang on. Luke, whilst you've actually got this, what it is that next to me, I have a huge kind of industrial strength color laser printer that we have because we've got like 50,000 children in the house and they need it for school. And someone thinks it's a good idea at this precise moment to send over stuff to be printed out. So clearly someone's just they're investigating some artwork at the Tate, and they're just printing.
James, this is why you need to be able to stream TV, because then you will stop producing children.
Yeah, I'm actually going to say I might say that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you stumped for that one.
This might come back, unfortunately. So I did. In fact, when you said, Colin, when you said, "Hey, we can go to James first," I was on mute at that point because that thing was starting. Because
the printer was off.
Yeah, I'm literally next door to the print. Sitting opposite the printer, I can touch it.
Okay. Well then, clearly, over in the UK, you guys had a different version of this episode than I watched. Maybe there's stuff in there that I didn't see because you guys have a longer version, or maybe there were some rewrites for the UK version because this one, it sucks balls.
And, no. And, so this is Night Terrors, right?
Night Terrors.
The one with two eyes in the dark, one
eyes
moon
in the
circles.
Dark, one moon circles. This is the one Jonathan Frakes said was some shitty effects quality. Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, but he got that bit right.
Really?
I mean, it does. It looks like she's swimming through one of Hulk's farts.
Yes. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And she is obviously on an awkward kind of crane position, right? I don't know why. I mean, it's clearly there's a bit of direction there where the director thought, we're going to have this type of shot. When it gives you very little more than just a person walking through a dark corridor. So they could have just done it as her walking, but the audacity of lifting her up by the backside is just fantastic.
Well, yeah. There's also the dream mythology, though, because flying dreams are supposed to be happy dreams. And she's having a nightmare that she's flying. So,
is that a thing? Is that...
Yeah, that's a thing. Flying dreams are meant to be happy dreams because it's like, you know, free.
Flying free. But then you realize, wait a minute, I'm not supposed to fly. That's when you go down.
Yeah, does this extend to, like, falling dreams and air crash dreams as well?
Yes.
I somehow doubt it.
But there's one thing in this episode I did appreciate when she was describing the directed dreaming, because I have been able to do that myself, where you're just not completely dead asleep. You know, you're still semi-conscious and you actually have a dream that you know you're dreaming. And I've been able to fly, and I've actually been able to maintain flight because I wanted to. And also, I don't know if I've talked about this on this podcast before, but I've had dreams where my dad, who died several years ago, I knew I was in his house. I knew I was in the basement. I knew I was dreaming. I knew where I was. And I knew to run upstairs and do it quickly, because now that I know I'm dreaming, I will wake up soon. And I've actually been able to go into his bedroom, have him at his desk or his computer playing solitaire or something that he used to play, and actually have a conversation with him until it,
So you can do lucid dreaming then?
Yes. I haven't been able to for a while.
That's the technical term for it. It's lucid dreaming.
Yeah, I think that's it. I've heard that, said that before, but
yeah,
it's really strange. But when I knew it was happening, I knew I had to do something quickly because I would lose it. Kind of like what Chakotay, was doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Vision Quest. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of.
But yeah, lucid dreaming is a thing. So.
Yeah.
And as you talk about Chakotay, I think there are bits of this episode that enter into other episodes. You have the directed dreaming bit. It's also not the first time, and it's not the last time, that the Enterprise falls into a hole in space and can't get out, even though they're trying to go warp 5. There's the issue of the mutiny. There's the issue of the people going crazy. A lot of these, this seems to be like a big mixing bag of concepts that get picked up across all of the series later on. I found that quite interesting.
And Worf will try to kill himself again someday.
Oh, well, yeah, I've got things to say when we get to that scene.
Okay. Well, let's start off with Eyes in the Dark, One Moon Circles. My question is, where the hell is Wesley when you need him? Because he would have solved this issue quickly, way before Data. You know, even when Data's... I know I'm jumping, but even when Data's getting more data, he still is trying to figure out what it could possibly mean.
Yeah. But then again, you would have had to have Wesley, like, the angst-ridden teenager being unable to dream and losing the plot. So, you know... That would have been like every other teenager anyway, so you wouldn't really know the difference.
I think the more we can stay away from Wesley's dreams that involve Troy, the better. But I was just thinking, Wesley's not in this episode, but of course he's not in this episode. He's left the show. So
no, he's not. He's at the academy.
Yeah, he's at the academy.
You were so happy when Wesley left. You can't, like, five episodes later turn around and say, well, it would have been good for Wesley to be in this episode.
Well, that was all sarcasm, really. But, you know, they would have turned to Wesley to solve the... They would have given it to Wesley to solve the problem.
Well, if Wesley was on the ship, they wouldn't have got caught in a Typhoon Drift in the first place.
No.
Because he would have picked it up on one of his science experiments.
Ah. Or made it worse. Or he would have been the first sacrifice. You know, they would have killed him first.
Well, this is one of my arguments that I have with people about Wesley, is the amount of times that Wesley saves the ship. And I say, yes, but the amount of time Wesley saves the ship is directly proportionate to the amount of times that Wesley puts the ship in danger in the first place.
Yeah. Fixing his own mistakes.
Yeah, basically, now, yeah.
Now, hang on. I thought that Wesley only saved the ship twice. Once in Naked Now, which is a direct consequence of his own fault, and the other time in the game.
Okay, no, more like Wesley saves the day is probably more accurate.
Rather than saving the ship, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he saves people too, as well.
Yeah, okay, so you're talking about...
Look at him with the nanites. Look at all the hassle he caused with the nanites.
Yeah. But
it's still his fault.
It was. Well, no, it was the teacher's fault for making him work so hard. Who knows? Okay, so the ship is looking for the USS Britain. Not Britain, the Britain. And there's life on board. But, I don't know, it's something. That was quoted by Deanna.
It was really good. I felt Deanna coming through the microphone there.
And there's one thing I'll give a 5-2 on this episode, and that's Deanna's 90.
Listen, I was about to make the statement. I thought you were going to say her performance, because I think the performance in this episode is pretty good across the board.
Yes,
I think Deanna's good. I think Crusher's good. I think Picard's good. And I think Data's good. And I really like the way that kind of they interact. And I think they're kind of like firing on all cylinders. And I've used that phrase a lot throughout season 4. But I think they're on top-notch form. And
actually, there you go. Marina Sirtis genuinely suffered for this particular episode because she suffers from...
she had to do more than one day on the
set. No, because she has a fear of heights. She has a genuine fear of heights. So when she's doing the whole flying through space up in the harness bit, she was genuinely terrified.
Does she really... I mean, I don't want to belittle people that actually have the phobia of heights, but how high up would she have been? I mean,
she was 15 foot up.
15 foot. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, she's only little, so.
Yeah, but she was 15 foot up in the harness.
Okay. Yeah,
that's. She said in an interview that the terror you see on her face is not acting. She was genuinely terrified.
Yeah. I know how that feels sometimes.
And did you notice, by the way? Did you notice the Britain became the Bratane?
Now, I was looking out for that because I know that that technically does happen, but I couldn't see it on my show.
When Riker beams over with the away team, okay, they show the outside of the ship and it's got the USS Britain on it. And then when they beam down behind the console, on the front of the console, it says Brat A.
Is that a redo or something, or was that a glitch?
It's just someone just labeled the console wrong. They put an A where they should have put an I. So when they're being downed on the Brat time.
Because I was keeping my eyes open for it and I couldn't see it this time. And I was wondering whether are you on Blu-ray or are you on the original?
I'm on
DVD releases. Okay, so it's at least it's not anything that they cleaned up.
No, it's I mean I remember watching this. I mean, I rewatched it on when we was going to do it a couple of weeks ago. I watched it on Netflix.
Oh, so hang on, I've actually got it here. It's also on the it's on the log as well. When the yeah, on the log, 7 minutes and 48 seconds when the captain's...
It's like 1 minute 40 or 1 minute 14
to start
in the beam beyond the console. I didn't know it was on the log as well.
Yeah.
But on the ship, it has BRI?
Yeah, on the ship, it has BRIT, and then when they beam down, it's got BRAT.
Hmm. I don't remember seeing the outside of the ship very much, but
because Britain is actually an American scientist. That's who the ship's named after. So,
I think the issue here is I think they obviously went crazy, right? So as they were going crazy, they ended up trying to rename their ship. Yeah, that's what happened. I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Perfect sense. Yeah, Someone just went around rearranging all the letters inside.
I mean, if I was going crazy and I had like the Enterprise or whatever, I'll certainly try to rename it.
Turn the S into a Z and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. BRATTAIN. That's what it looks like on the captain's log thing.
Yeah, but on the outside of the ship, it's BRITTAIN.
Fascinating. Good catch. Okay. So an away team beams over to the USS Graveyard to find that all the crew killed each other, and only one person, a Betazoid, is still alive. But he's unable to communicate.
Can we just do that bit there with the Betazoid when Deanna says, "I think he's a Betazoid"? How can she not know he's a Betazoid? I mean, do you not recognize your own race?
No.
It's like a Vulcan coming into the room and saying, "Oh, they've got pointed ears. They might be a Romulan, but I think they're a Vulcan."
Mm. How would Betazoids know each other by sight?
Well, they're telepaths.
Right.
And empaths. So she would have got something from him.
Oh, she would have got something from
him. They've also got black eyes.
That's interesting. So when it comes to Betazoids, she can read their thoughts. But humans, she can only feel their emotions.
Well, everyone knows Deanna's a telepath one week and an empath the next week. It all depends on what the script writers want her to be.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, anyway, have you ever wondered? I mean, this guy was so spooked. He was in a catatonic state. But he has information you need. Do you ever wonder if they just, like, slapped him in the face? Do you think that'll bring him out of it? Or is it better just to spend days sitting by his bed getting words out at a time?
Well, I took it she was delving into his subconscious rather than his consciousness.
Because I thought the lights were on, but no one's home. All she's hearing is the TV inside the house, but you can't really make out what's really happening.
Well, yeah, but there's some instances when she's talking to him telepathically and he looks at her.
Yeah.
Or has facial responses to what she's saying.
But he doesn't have facial responses to what he's thinking. I noticed that. He gets rather dramatic, but I would have expected him to make wincing looks as he was describing the terror.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Yeah. If it was that scary, yeah, you would have some like facial recognition.
Yeah. Obviously, the actor just laid there and stared up, not knowing what they were going to put in later. Yeah.
Someone should have had cue cards above the bed. This is what she's saying.
Well, he should have said them first, and then they should have played them back to him where he can react at the moment.
Did you think this episode actually made that actor's promo reel? because I think he got quite shortchanged to this episode, right? He said, "Oh, I'm going to be on Star Trek." Okay, what are you going to play?
Some sort of cool alien who got credited as being a body.
Yeah, but I assume body was. I mean, would they have had to pay like proper union wage for this person on the ground so he didn't talk and just sat there and...
Well, this is the thing, isn't it the rule if you actually have speak?
Well, certainly there was there's no speech on the body, right? But
no, but it's speech, telepathic speech.
But by the way, you know, this is on a complete tangent because that's the way I'm feeling today. But I was told we were googling along Memory Alpha the other day. So you know the ensign that takes over from Ensign Roe in season 6 and 7. There's that black ensign, black lady ensign.
Okay.
That comes on board. I can't remember what her name was, but she kind of turned up in a whole load of episodes towards the end of the TNG, and she actually talked. And it was when I was going through Memory Alpha. Apparently, all of her lines were dubbed by a different actress because she was in a non-talking role, and they had to take away what she said and just dubbed someone else's voiceover. And I found that really depressing.
That would suck.
It would really suck for her, right?
So the voiceover actress gets one fee and she gets another fee because it's not her voice.
Yeah.
That seems a bit convoluted.
Why even cast her in the first place if you're going to do that?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, that's what I was thinking. You know, this guy, that may not be the real guy's voice either. He's just, you know, lay there. Look at the ceiling. Now look over at Deanna. Now lay there. Now look at the ceiling. Oh, you're in pain.
Yeah, it could be. I'd have to look that up to see if it's actually him doing the telepathic voice.
Ah. Well, it doesn't say anything about...
If you think of Star Wars, it was one guy in the suit, James Earl Jones doing the voice.
Uh-huh.
And then when they actually take the helmet off at the end of Star Wars, it's another actor. So there was three actors basically involved in Darth Vader.
But you know the story there, right? It was going to be what's his name, the Cornish dude. Sorry.
The Green Cross Codeman.
Yeah, the Green Cross Codeman. Yes, of course, that's his. That is the highest role he was ever able to fulfill. But apparently he it was going to be him, but he ended up leaking parts of the story, and then George Lucas just refilmed this scene as a way of spiting him.
Don't cross George.
That's what I kind of heard, but it might not be true.
All right.
Well, he didn't even know that James Earl Jones was doing the voice until he went to the premiere.
Really?
Yeah, really. He went to the premiere and sat down, and then when Darth Vader talked and it was James Earl Jones' voice, that's the first he knew about it.
Is it?
Funny. All right. So here's a very important question that I don't know if either of you are going to be able to answer. But this guy, he's in a completely catatonic state, and he's just laying there, fully clothed, by the way. He's not even in a hospital gown or anything. What happens when he has to go to the bathroom? I mean, does he get up, stagger in there, go, come back, and lay back down, and then go back to his wincing?
If he's in a semi-coma, then that normally fits a catheter.
Exactly, but you don't see anything that would resemble one.
So is your complaint that you don't see the catheter being
You don't see the bag. You don't see anything.
Oh, no,
anything.
What it is, Luke, off salt. I've got it. They beam it out of him.
That's what I think is happening. You know, yeah.
Yeah, every time his bladder's full, they just beam it out.
Uh-huh. Okay. And the Yurizu...
That explains why O'Brien's in a bad mood. He's been beaming pee at the guy all day.
And what's worse, he has to do tests on it to see if it's compatible with the warp engines.
See, now we know why O'Brien's in a bad mood. It's all making sense.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Keiko's a lot of things, but do you really think she's cheating on him with Tom?
Yeah, this Tom guy that you never heard of before and never hear of again.
That's married bliss for you. I mean, obviously, I thought he was pacing back and forth. I had forgotten about the whole Tom Corbin thing, but I thought he was pacing back and forth because she wasn't home to get supper ready.
Yeah, because you need someone to come home and tell the replicator what to do.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you could say he thinks she was caught with her plants down.
Just while we're on the replicator, then, it can just jump ahead of you. Data says towards the end that they can't make any complex structures.
Yeah.
Oh. So does that mean they can't make food?
Good point.
So the replicator stuff just doesn't work, right? It's, you know, you invent, it's a technology that is, that has to be too powerful to really live in the world. Because as soon as you have the, I can imagine that there might be some particular complicated structures that you can't replicate. But then you have to ask yourself the question, well, what makes them complicated? Is it that there's a vast number of atoms in it? Or is it a very kind of, or are they very, very heavy atoms or something like that? Is it particularly like energized or in a state that would decay if you weren't able to, instantaneously create them or whatever it happens to be? And they never seem to answer it other than saying that the stuff we can't replicate is usually important for the plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you can't replicate Latinum.
That's unlikely. Yeah. Although, hang on, I say that. I mean, it's probably unlikely. It's more unlikely that you can't replicate things. Certainly, by the way, because you have moved towards this with 3D printing, right? The way that I imagined it was that the replicator was always this, like, you know, matter energy converter, whizzy majig. And by the way, I've mentioned before, I have a problem with this matter energy converter issue. But let me just park that. So the idea is that given a bit of energy, you can turn into matter and you can rearrange the molecules in whatever way you see fit. But with like 3D printing coming on, you kind of go back to the old original series idea of matter synchronizers. Synchronizers.
Oh, the protein resequencer.
Indeed, the resequencers, where they effectively have a bucket of goo that they turn into stuff. Yeah. And I think that if you approach it from the perspective of you have a bucket of goo that you can turn into stuff, the limitations of what you can build out of that goo are a lot more realistic. So TNG might have been in a better position by just having that kind of TOS, like, we have buckets of goo that we can turn into things rather than having energy that you can turn into anything, because that's just too powerful and they have to chop their own legs off far too often.
But what turns into the bucket of goo?
Well, no, the thing is, it's like the goo's already there.
From where?
You have to refill the goo, right? You go to the shop, you pick up, you know, it's like you pick up flour from the shop and you can turn it into bread.
Put a tube on and top your goo up.
So you would have to take the loaf of bread, turn it into a goo, so that you could turn it back into a loaf of bread later.
You can think of it like that, yeah.
Yeah, you can think of it like that. Yeah.
But see, the thing is, you could keep on going. How did they make the bread to turn it into the goo? Is it the goo
Cisco's,
that turns into
Cisco's
the bread?
Cisco's dad made it at the restaurant.
Cisco's dad?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I mean, this, you know, how can a replicator create an onion? I mean, it's got to know its molecular structure, but where does it get the parts from it? Just out of energy?
Well, this is the thing. Yeah, well, replicator's that... supposed to, it's supposed to come from energy.
Yeah, it's supposed to be similar
and
to...
And by that, what they... Yeah, and what they're really saying there, by the way, is that they'll have, for example, a stream of photons that will have a certain amount of energy. They'll collect a whole load of energy from this photon stream, and then they would constitute that into higher... molecules, so they'll make things out of them that will eventually make atoms, and then they'll eventually make more atoms, and they'll combine the atoms with the chemical bonds, and then eventually it will turn into whatever you want it to turn into. So they basically just combine subatomic particles together, and they build them up as almost like a kind of just a Lego, really, nothing more than that. Yeah.
It's like if they're going to the holodeck and they run a program where they're eating and drinking. That's a combination of the transporter and the replicator working in harmony.
But how do they get nutrients out of that?
Well, nutrients are nothing more than just a chemical bond, right? So when you break it down, what is a nutrient? A nutrient is just... It is a chemical bond in the substance that you're eating that you put into your body with a you know, another chemical that breaks it down and releases energy. That's really all that you're doing. So really the quote-unquote nutrients is just that when you're making the matter, you are not, you know, you're not keeping it at its most base state, but you're adding more energy to it so that it gets into this like elevated, more energetic state, which in this case will just happen to correspond to a bit of oxygen, a bit of hydrogen stuck to it, and well, that turns into your glass of water kind of thing.
Okay. Fascinating. Okay, so...
But it's too powerful. It's too powerful, I'm afraid, because the technology you need, and certainly for transporters, right, the technology you need in order to replicate a human, which let's not even get into this idea of there being the Heisenberg principle that you have to overcome as well, but the technology you need in order to line everything up is... It's so sophisticated even for like a, you know, a mushroom or an onion, that the idea that there's some stuff that you wouldn't be able to do, it's fairly unlikely. Certainly if we're talking about chemical stuff, if you're just talking about building up like an element or an alloy or something, that's a lot simpler than building up a mushroom or a strawberry, because of the, you know, the chemicals involved. It's an additional level higher, certainly when you're talking about the like organic chemistry. I when you ask the question, why can't they replicate it, it's always because the plot needs them not to be able to replicate it.
Right. I mean, you would think it could replicate a dilithium crystal. All it is a hunk of rock. But they can't. Okay. Now, do you think this episode would have been better done, let's say, if you had been watching it live when it came out in March of 1991, do you think it would have been better if they held on to it till, say, middle of October?
Well, I watched it on Halloween because I had the backlog of the episodes to catch up. And not only did I watch this one on Halloween, but I also watched the one that we're reviewing next week on Halloween. And they're both spooky episodes.
You never watched Catspaw?
I didn't watch Catspaw. A couple of years ago, I threatened Cena that Catspaw wasn't as bad as she thinks it is, and then she challenged me to watch it on Halloween, which I did. And it's actually not that good. It really isn't. But it's been about a year and a half, or it must be 2 years now since I've watched it, and my memory fades, and I'm now going to proclaim that it's actually not that bad. It's that far enough in the past that it's not causing me pain.
Okay. All right. So anyway, back on the Britain, Commander LaForge and Ensign Scaredy Pants, they're trying to get the engines working. And that was kind of spooky, you know, hearing only one guy can hear this thing, something clanking.
But it's strange, right? Cause what he says is that the ensign says, "Oh, can you hear that noise?" And it's like, what noise? And it's, the ship's been thoroughly searched. You know, it's as if, A, we've never had an instance of only one person hearing the noise. You know, that's a trope that comes up and up again and again and again, right? Mm-hmm. And so even towards, you know, with cause and effect, you have the only person able to hear the noise from before. And then the other one, which is, despite there being no life on this planet or ship or, you know, outpost, someone comes and gets them. And that's, again, a standard trope. So I'm kind of with Jensen here. If he's been around for more than a couple of weeks, he knows that hearing voices when no one else can hear them and being attacked in a room full of no one is pretty much standard business.
Yeah, and also Geordi, he just dismissed him instead of saying, where did the noise come from?
Yeah, actually, so once again, an indication of the Geordi being the worst manager in the world, right?
Yes.
He said, Geordi, I kind of heard this noise down here. Shut up. Get back to work.
Yeah.
He was thoroughly searched. Where did the noise come from? Yeah.
He could have turned his magic visor on him.
Yeah. But it was in the guy's head, though.
Yeah, but Geordi didn't even bother, like, you know, oh, what if the crew might have survived? Could have been in the Jeffries tube. You know, something like that. Oh, where did the knives come from? No, he just says, yeah, you're an idiot. Get on with your job.
I mean, also, we do know that they don't have a clear sensor reading, right? So what they've done is they've gone through the ship and they have searched for it. Now, we know how thorough security can be. So there are probably three or four bodies they left behind anyway. Geordi should not. He should really be listening and taking more care of his underlings.
You think they left bodies on the ship?
Well, I have no faith that security found them all. Maybe I should put it that way.
Okay. Well, they did find 32 of them.
I'm sure there were 47.
47.
Well, Picard actually sounds a crew of 34.
A crew of 34, yeah. And they found 32 and one alive. So you're right.
Which I thought was a very small crew, to be honest. 34 seems a very small crew.
You think, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, back to Married Bliss. Do you think O'Brien could have just said, computer, where's Keiko O'Brien? She's in the whatever. The botany lab. Yeah. And
I mean, it's not like you can hide on a galaxy-class starship because all you have to do is ask the computer where someone is.
Yeah. Oh, and where's Tom Corbin? He's in the same place. How close are they to each other? About 5 inches?
Maybe he could have put like a... He must have, you can get like Siri to do this even now, right? He said, you know, please tell me when X comes into contact with Y for more than, you know, 2 minutes. He could have just set up a program to stalk his wife.
Right. Computer, let me know when Keiko O'Brien's heart rate goes up above 100.
Right, I've just looked up the Miranda class on Memory Alpha. Its crew can hold 220 officers.
Ah.
So the personnel level is 220 officers and crew. So they was very lightly staffed.
I wonder, they didn't even say what they were doing there.
No, they just said they responded to a distress call.
No, I mean the Bretagne. Or Bretagne, or whatever his name.
No.
I don't know. Maybe they were...
Maybe they were charting gaseous anomalies.
That could be.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think they're equipped for that, right? You'd really need to send your brand new state-of-the-art flagship for that kind of a mission.
Yeah, that's what you do, yeah. Yeah, the most advanced ship in the fleet goes looking for gaseous anomalies, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, with a trans-warp drive, if at all possible.
But he does have really nice teacups.
Oh, so Gillespie. Boy, he was a handful, wasn't he? All the, suspicion and paranoia like crazy. And the other people were joining in. I hear you, man.
Fear breeds fear, doesn't it?
I guess. But, I mean, so we have them in 10-4 just kind of like hanging out. And there was, two, three scenes in 10-4 to them just getting worse and worse till finally the barroom brawl breaks out. Love the barroom brawl, don't you?
Yeah, a gun and pulls out a huge gun.
Yeah.
I mean, where does she keep that gun at all the other times?
Well, she obviously keeps it A, armed, and B, well within reach, which must go against certain regulations on that.
And also, did she not blow a hole in the ceiling?
Well, actually, by the way, the special effects on the gunshot were pretty shoddy. Why does she need a non-standard phaser? I mean, she ends with saying, that was set in one. Do you want to see set in two? And no one says, yeah, go on. Try it out on O'Brien. I would have been tempted to.
Well, I would, yeah, but I mean, 71 obviously isn't that good because she fires it straight up and does no damage to the ceiling.
Yeah. Well, just off camera, right, a bulkhead fell down and crushed a couple of people.
Flattened someone.
Yeah, but, I was just thinking that barroom brawl, the last one was better. You know, I mean, had people, thrown over tables. But still, I think the worst part of that last barroom brawl was the guy's face that got planted into the bar. And You can hear that.
That's why Guinan's got the gun now, because of what happened last time.
Yeah, exactly. Must be. But I'm sure it may not be standard issue. It may not even be legal, but what's Picard going to do about it?
Oh, well, Guinan's a different thing altogether, isn't she, basically, in what she can do and what she can get away with and what I've just said.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but anyway. Okay, the barroom brawl. So where are we going here now?
We must be going backwards because the barroom brawl is right at the end.
Yeah, pretty much. Almost.
Jumping back and forward.
Yeah, that's the way I do it, man. I roll. That's the way I roll. Ensign Rager. Does she ever speak before, or is this the first time? And all confused. I don't know how to...
I think she says... She must have said yes, sir, or I, sir, before, or something, to acknowledge an order.
And I like the fact that Riker sends her immediately to sickbay, right? It's like, oh, I've forgotten how to do my job. Get to the hospital. I just felt that it was fit funny.
Yeah, well, in a way, but also they kind of know something's going on.
Oh, yeah.
So...
I mean, they're in an area where all these people have killed each other, and now they're stuck there. So, yeah, obviously something's going on. But what do you think about...
I mean, if it was Geordi, Geordi would have just started to suck it up and get on with it.
Yeah. And now we have a barroom brawl that's about to go off, and what do? They send two security guards.
Yeah, because that'll work.
Yeah.
Just like, what, 50, 60 people down there? We'll send two guys.
Yeah. Just like when Worf is in his quarters, you know, because he's not feeling happy.
Yeah, that thing with Worf and the suicide thing, does he have that table ready just in case he wants to kill himself?
It's regular enough in his life, or it's expected enough that he obviously keeps a little suicide table by his bed.
I mean, it's like it's straight there, straight to the table, straight out comes the knife. There's the oils to purify the blade. Yeah, man, I've been planning this for months.
I mean, even the case has form-fitting foam for this knife.
Yeah.
And it even has a sticker on the inside of the case. So it must be like Federation part number 55C23KNIFE.
It just tickled me how he's got a ready-made suicide table. I just thought it was really funny.
Yeah, and his bottles of suicide wine are... You know, he really shouldn't pour that stuff on it. I mean, he really could give himself an infection.
Yeah.
What if he misses? Here's another thing, I guess, because he's completely lost it. He's not going to Stovacor, is he? Or
yeah. No, because he wouldn't have been an honorable death.
Oh. Or, I mean, you know, Klingons. Stovacor fits the moment. So, because he experienced fear, the warrior way would be to end it. I don't know.
Yeah, there's probably a Klingon loophole somewhere that allowed you to commit suicide in certain circumstances and still get to Stovacor.
Yeah.
Although, why does a race of people have an afterlife when they actually admit they killed their gods?
Mm.
So if you killed all your gods, then how have you got an afterlife?
Hmm. Good point. Don't know. Okay, so how about Picard in his ready room door chime?
Yeah, that made me laugh, because why didn't he just call someone to fix his door chime?
Do you think he figured it was in his head? And no, that is until he hears the...
Yeah, I think when he heard the knock on the door, then he figured it was in his head. But not until then, he probably just thought it was a defective door chime.
Yeah. Or they were playing a trick on him. Because I say, what the...
So Riker's riding around the corner, just keeps ringing him and running.
Yeah. Or Data, you know.
Yeah, watch this. This is really annoying.
Run.
Then runs back to the station and just acts normal.
They're right.
Computer, let us know when Captain Picard starts walking towards the door.
Red alert! Captain Picard is coming towards the door.
Oh. Oh, hello. Oh, hi, Rosie. Hey, guys. Rosie wants to come in and say something. Ah, what did you want to say? What did you want to say, girl? No, the microphone's right there. Okay, Rosie is my, what are you anyway? Border collie?
I thought you were going to say niece there for a second.
I'm sorry, we're kissing. What'd you say?
You can forget that.
Oh, no. No. Hey, no, not in the nose. Anywhere but the nose. Yeah, she's a type. She loves to nibble noses. She loves to, I don't know, not your nose. Oh, what are you shaking for? She doesn't understand why I'm talking like this, so it's okay, baby. Okay, you want to go back down?
Maybe she's just seen the election result. That's why she's shaking.
Yeah. Is that it? Did you find out who's going to be president next?
Okay, so, Lou, let me just mention something about... No. About election results.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys in the US are between 5 and 8 hours ahead of us, behind us in terms of time.
Yeah.
Right? You guys... therefore, we're closing your polls. Actually, by the way, it seems like some of your polls close like 7 o'clock in the evening, 8 o'clock in the evening. That's like crazy early for the UK. UK always goes to 10 o'clock at night. But anyway, that put aside, you guys were able to declare the full count quicker than we're able to declare our count.
And I don't know how that's possible because, it's the Electoral College thing. And I'll be honest, I really don't understand what all the Electoral College is, but it sounds like if it's not a straight up, he won by 1,000 votes, so therefore he's president, it's these people decided to vote for him. So what is a vote for?
No, I understand, but I'm mightily impressed that you guys can turn around a vote for the president quicker than we can turn around a vote for the mayor of London.
Right.
And that's actually true in terms of the amount of time it takes before you call. You guys can technically call before California is closed in certain circumstances, which is, you know, we'll never be anywhere near that. And hey, Lou, by the way, I noticed that Hillary Clinton actually, she's going to win the popular vote.
Right. So how is that possible?
That makes sense because we have a first past the post system here, and in the last general election, UKIP actually got more votes than the Liberal Democrats, but UKIP got one MP in Parliament and Liberal Democrats got 8. So it all depends on how many votes you get in how many areas, and then you win that particular area, which then gives you the seats, and so on and so forth.
No, sure. I'm surprised that you guys still use the Electoral College for the president on the grounds that it's not like a constituency member. It's not like the Senate, right, or the House of Representatives. Mm-mm. Is there a kerfuffle about that? Like people winning the popular vote but not winning the college, or vice versa?
Yes, I have seen a few people I know on Facebook that have pointed that out. The number of votes didn't correspond with the results.
Because also, you know, it happened to Al Gore as well, right, in 2000.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, wasn't that the court that determined that Bush won?
Yes, but in addition, Al Gore won the popular vote as well. So he didn't win the Electoral College unless Florida would have been sent his way after... you know, due to the recount, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think that process got halted, which meant it got pushed back to Bush. But still, you have this particular, you know, potential split between college and popular vote. Anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
Just interesting.
Okay. Let me find out where I'm at here. Oh, so the whole point of the Ready Room scene is to find out that nobody's dreaming. Except for Deanna, who's having nightmares. So she's dreaming. Yeah. Why is she going crazy then?
Well, because she's locked in an island.
Now, I have to say, I do quite like... I mentioned a little bit a while ago, I like the performances here. I think that they do a good job of conveying that they're going, you know, that they're going crackers. Now, I have to say, I think they're going crackers too fast. I don't think people would actually go crazy that quickly if they weren't able to... well, first of all, there's a big debate as to whether or not you actually need a REM sleep. And if you were not to have it, whether you would go crazy like is shown here, it's very unlikely that you'd go crazy in such a, you know, such a clear way, so that, you know, the entirety of the crew of the Protean would have committed suicide. You know, that's not really realistic. But I do quite like the way that they play it, and I also found that this episode, when I watched it for the first time, I really didn't know where they were going with this. Whether it was them going crazy, whether it was actually something that was real, but, you know, you didn't know about it because it's all Star Trek-y and it's alien-y. And I think they do a good job of keeping that mystery in play.
So you don't think lack of REM sleep would have a problem with you?
Well, okay, actually, I think that... So my wife, she went 9 months without more than 2 hours sleep at any given point when our baby number two was around. And she claims that that nearly drove her crazy. But that's like 9 months. Mm-hmm. Now, these people seem to have, I think it seems like, what, is this like a day or two or three or four or whatever, maybe a week. These guys break quickly. So they're not, you know, they're not tough cookies like a nursing mother is.
Well, I suppose it's the monotony of what she was going through.
Oh, no, but also in terms of the broken sleep as well, just physically the broken sleep, that it did take it out of her. And the length of time, it wasn't just that, you know, you could get 2 hours here, 2 hours there, 2 hours there, 2 hours there. It was the, you know, not being able to sit down for like a 4 hour stretch for the best part of a year.
Yeah, that'd be crazy. It'd be crazy. Okay. So then, I know it's a little jumpy, but what about Picard on the turbo lift?
We're going backwards.
I know. I didn't get to it yet. Picard on the turbo lift.
I think it's a little bit hokey. I think the only real scene that they do well with the Night Terrors is the Crusher scene in the morgue, which I think is wonderful, because it's the way that they film it and the way that they have the kind of very, very tight angle, and then you see them kind of come up, and it's not like a jump scare per se. It's they're not doing a trick, right? Well, of course they're doing a trick, but the way that it's cut, it's, I don't know, it just seems like there's a certain inevitability about it. And in fact, I think it's very much like a dreamlike state. It's not that they cut it very harshly so that things like jump up and shock you, but it's almost, there's an inevitability of these guys kind of waking and coming after you. And in particular, as she's walking backwards and then knocks into the door, knocks into the wall, and then she notices there are people beside her. I really like how that is, how that particular scene is cut and filmed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's 10 days to go without sleep, by the way.
Wimps.
I don't know. I think that'd drive me crazy too. 10 days is a long time.
But yeah, the best scene in regards to that is, like James says, he's in the morgue. Although, you know, sense of willpower from the doctor there when she just says, like, go away, and she gets control back.
Mm.
Although the one did stay sitting up over her shoulder. But hey.
Mm-hmm. And Riker's sleeping with snakes sometimes. Oh, that was
just, well, yeah. Actually, that when Riker did the snake scene, I just thought, oh, the snake in the bed has got snakes in his bed. So
more than the usual snake he has.
And I did like Riker's shiny pillow.
Yeah.
You know, and what's he's got beyond his headboard? He's got like a miniature garden as a headboard. That was really bizarre. He's got like a little garden at the top of his bed.
Really?
But yeah, it's the future, so therefore your pillow's shiny and your cover's shiny as well.
Huh. Yeah, I didn't notice the headboard. I'm going to have to... Oh, yeah. Oh, that is so cute. He's got little plants and...
Yeah.
His shiny pillows. His...
Obviously, that's for when he's wooing the ladies.
Right.
His... I'm gonna see my plants.
His shiny... blanket that looks like aluminum.
Yeah, and his shiny pillow to go with it.
Yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying, but I still don't know how they could possibly sleep that way with the blankets or the pillows on the back of whatever that is, and his head creaked up like that. But oh, you could tell, yeah, because you could tell he's absolutely just he's having a hard time, and he wakes up with those snakes, and then they're gone. But anyway, so the snake in the bed, and it wasn't Deanna. That's sad. So, let's see.
So, just getting to the bit about Picard, I mean, when he's, like, screaming in the lift.
Yeah.
And he later says that he watched his grandfather deteriorate.
Right.
Did you two think that was Alzheimer's that they was mentioning?
Space Alzheimer's.
Space Alzheimer's.
It's fascinating, because I wondered that, too. I wonder what it was, is he calling dementia?
Yeah, because, I mean, this is like the future, so that obviously if that's the case, then people still, like, you know, do suffer from some form of dementia in the future.
Right. Fascinating, yeah. But then again, the entire bridge crew came to look at him, except for Data. I noticed Data was carried on with his work as if nothing ever happened.
Yeah, well, Data's the only one that's keeping it together, isn't he? So he's got to stay focused.
Right. Sir? Never mind, that didn't just happen.
Yeah, but then that brings... The fact that Data's the only one not affected also brings him to think about what Deanna says about the fact that Data's odds dream at a different frequency,
mm-hmm.
which I'm sure James has got some scientific explanation for.
Yep, but betazoids aren't real. They're made up.
But the other thing is, though, James, is this is a crew of 1,000 people. She cannot be the only telepath on board.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you'd like to believe that...
Oh, hold on, why that? I mean, Worf is the only Klingon on board.
Well, yeah, but that's different. That's not a member of the Federation. The Klingon Empire is not a member of the Federation. Bautazoid is a member of the Federation. Vulcan is a member of the Federation.
Ah.
You know, there's other races in the Federation besides them two that are telepaths. This is the flagship of the Federation. It would have representatives from all the primary Federation planets. There can't be one person on this ship that's a telepath.
No, but certainly in TNG era, right, it was always humans plus one person from another planet plus another person from another planet at most. It is a very much a... I think someone once refers to the Federation as a Homo sapiens only club.
Mm-hmm.
And when you watch...
That was Chancellor Gorkon's daughter in Star Trek VI.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. But it does feel like it. And I know what it is, right? It's that they can't have the makeup for everyone. So you obviously have to assume all like third lieutenants that you don't see in the background have clearly Cassian or that kind of like weird and wonderful things that only your imagination can come up with. But yeah, I think the reality is that unfortunately out of the, 1,000 crew, all but six of them are humans. And then,
Anabolian.
Yeah, all of them are... and then on top of that, right, almost all of them are white Americans as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true too. See, I'm sorry. I lost my spot where I was at. We already got the bar scenes. We've lumped them into one. One solution was to use the main deflector, just like we did with the Borg. Oh no, it was the deflector. But of course, it just fizzles out. And that's what makes
so well last time.
Yeah, it worked well. Yeah, exactly. It was, but the reason it didn't work well is because Picard knew about it.
Yeah.
So if Picard had known about it, would it have worked? If Locutus hadn't known about it, would it have worked?
I say yes, because otherwise it takes away from the greatest scene in Star Trek, right?
Yeah. You have to say yes, it would have worked. Otherwise, when he says everything that he knew, I now know, doesn't work.
Number one. He says number one, doesn't he? I didn't just make that up.
Oh,
hang on a second. Hang on. Lou, ask me how I've been. Because we haven't chatted since I went away on holiday. And one of the things that we did on holiday, which I'm sure many people out there did, and we're lucky to have got tickets, frankly, is that we spent our half term up north in a city called Manchester. That's kind of like a... So it's everyone knows of Manchester. I'm just being slightly facetious here. But what they had on the Manchester Science Festival. So we're that type of family that when it's holiday time, we don't go to the beach, we don't go skiing, we don't go abroad, we go to Manchester for the Manchester Science Festival. And we take the kids along and we teach them science. Somehow we expect them to become like scientists or at least PhD holders. That's kind of like a given. But as part of this Manchester Science Festival week, they had a showing of Star Trek First Contact with a little bit of a sciencey talk before the show and then sciencey talk afterwards. And I took three of the kids there. Within a science themed kind of like frankly homework session, and we watched First Contact. Now, isn't that fantastic?
That is, but if they use that to talk about science, how much of the science did they get wrong?
Well, to be honest with you, it was a very thinly veiled excuse to watch First Contact. in complete fairness. And the discussion that was around it, and actually hats off to the guys that put this on, because I thought it was actually a very good discussion, but they mainly spoke about the concept of First Contact within the Star Trek universe. And the guy presenting it made a very valid point, which I think upgrades my liking of First Contact. And I actually think that it might now be my favorite Star Trek film. Because he made some very valid points about how unique it is within the canon. And it's one of the very few films that is that the entirety of the Federation's way of life is at stake. And it was a lot of fun.
Well, I think the reason that might be is because our appreciation for the Wrath of Khan seems to deteriorate as time goes on.
No, I didn't buy that.
No, I don't mean it's we don't like it as much. But let's just face it. I mean, all they did is yell at each other and lob torpedoes at each other. What made it so great? But,
So the theory that goes out there is that Wrath of Khan is the best film.
Yeah.
First Contact's the best Star Trek film.
Mm.
And I had a lot of time for that debate. I just popped into my mind, and I remember I took the three kids, which are 12, 10, and an 8-year-old. It was the first time they had seen First Contact. They thought it was really, really great. And I asked them at the end, what was the scariest bit? And what it was is when Data and the Borg Queen were kissing, they found that excruciating. And they're going, no, don't. Why would you do that, Data? Why would you do that? They're at that age.
Well, wouldn't you with the Borg Queen?
No. I thought you were going to say with Data there for a second.
No, not Data either. No.
But he's pretty functional.
Yeah. But, I don't know. I mean, okay. You want to jump ahead to, what's that episode that, The Host?
The Host is coming very soon.
Yeah. What if Data was transplanted into a woman? Into a woman android. Would you be okay with that?
What do you mean by would I be? I would be very happy for Data to be able to choose his gender, yes.
Because he could take off his head.
Is that the question?
Yeah, he could take off his head. So you can't. This is really strange. How do I want to approach this question?
I wouldn't mind if the head was replaced with a different face.
No, no. Data's head.
Brent Spiner's head on a woman's body.
Yes. Would that be okay?
So when you say, would that be okay? What like, I mean, would you say?
Could you have feelings for Data, who his head was transplanted to a female android?
I doubt it.
So you're asking him if you'd be into a robot love.
Right. Okay, so, let's put it this way. Let's go to LOL. LOL was pretty, wasn't she?
She's still a robot.
Yes, but she's still a robot, but...
Well, an android, sorry.
We
met LOL at Star Trek Vegas.
Well,
you met the actress, yeah.
We saw her. Well, yeah, we walked past her. I didn't have the nerve to talk to any of them. I tried to talk to Garrett. That went nowhere. I thought, oh, God, this guy doesn't even remember.
So basically getting kind of back on tangent to what you were talking about, because we've gone way off the story. You're saying to James, would he be into a bit of android love?
Yes, and I'd say, no, it's not really my thing. And he said, what if I replace the body with, like, lady parts?
Yeah, but it's still an android.
But let's say you were interested in androids and LOL was available. You'd be fine with that. But what if Data's head and LOL's head switched?
No, it's still an android.
What I'm getting at is...
The sex of it is irrelevant. It's an android.
It's an android, but... I mean,
that's like saying I would fall in love with my sex doll.
Well, I mean, you know, somebody falls in love with a hologram.
It's a dickhead.
Joe!
You know, I think Geordi also thinks the real woman who the hologram's based on is also going to fall in love with him because he's that stupid.
Well... yeah, that's true, but you know, the future does seem to suggest that perhaps she does. So maybe, maybe not. Anyway, oh God, I gotta find out where I am with this.
Actually, so Colin, I don't think
the android ping.
I don't think you've heard the episode yet, but the issue that when we were discussing in Galaxy's Child and Leia Brahms came on, and it is my assertion that Geordi and Leia do not get married.
Yeah.
They do not get married in, you know,
no, because later. She's already married.
No, indeed. And then the thing comes up, well, what about in All Good Things? There's a Leia in All Good Things. And I said, yes, of course. Geordi eventually found someone to get married to. And he's the kind of freak that would get his wife to change her name and hairstyle to look like this Leia Brahms character that he met on the holodeck.
Yeah, Geordi would totally do that.
Absolutely. So there's no way that the actual Leia referenced in All Good Things is Leia Brahms, the scientist. No, maybe Leah Brahms, the mail order wife from Slovenia.
Yeah, if he'd done his research properly on his fantasy hologram, he would have read her personnel file and found out she was bloody married.
Right. Yeah, he didn't bother. Because obviously he doesn't want to know the truth. He loves.
Yeah, because Geordi's a dick.
Yeah, exactly. But wasn't Leah promoted to something in All Good Things?
Yes, she was. She was the institute, the one from the original series.
Can I just clarify? Are we reviewing All Good Things now?
No. Oh, then we better get back to this one here. Okay, so the main deflector fizzles out, and Worf runs away from the bridge to kill himself, but he doesn't get to do it. He ends up getting stopped by Deanna, who says, "It's not real." I'm surprised he didn't get up and stab her first. And then two security guards comes running. Would they have been enough to stop him? Because why is it the whole ship is falling apart, but whenever you get security, they seem to be fine?
Maybe they're in hibernation until you need them, and then they just get activated.
That's a good question. I didn't bring this up earlier because I'm an idiot, and I clearly went past it in my notes. Why doesn't Dr. Crusher just sedate everyone until they can figure out what's going on?
Or indeed put people into stasis, as has been discussed on numerous occasions.
Not essential personnel. Report to sickbay for stasis. Oh, I'm sure Gillespie would have loved that.
Everyone other than Data.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
That's all we need.
Yeah, or they could have just flooded the ship with an acetylene gas.
Yes.
And they just knocked everyone out.
Something to solve this, because they're deteriorating to the point
they're going to become the Britain unless they do something, but they don't.
But then again, I suppose if you're not thinking properly, you're not going to think of that type of thing anyway. So.
But Data gets to be acting captain. Well, Deanna tries again to try and get more information out of this guy who we don't know what his name is. Or do we know what his name is?
The Bactazoid.
Yeah, could that be one of the names that really didn't get mentioned, but yet they're on the...
Yeah. This also raises up the thing about why didn't the island just say we need hydrogen?
That's another thing, too. I say, Data begins to wonder if the message in the dream is they have hydrogen or need hydrogen. Why do they...
But hydrogen is a proper noun, though. So it is hard to... It would be hard to communicate. But then again...
Yeah, James, they can
moon
communicate.
Moon is also a proper noun.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, they can communicate a moon circling another. And all they can use lots of other words. Why can't I just use hydrogen? You know, obviously they've learned Federation standards somehow, so they can communicate by using the actual proper words.
Right. Well, let me ask you a question. When the writer kind of came up with this, I went, "Ooh, we can use hydrogen and we can use one moon circles." Do you think he kind of did a high five with his writing partner there and then?
Oh, because God, yeah.
I get the impression that they did, and they went, "Ooh, yeah. Let's print this." It's not, there are clearly big holes right in it, and
well, yeah, the other big hole and all is when they're doing the computer thing and he's going through all the elements.
Yeah,
and Deanna says stop, go back. He doesn't go back. He carries on going down.
I always thought it just replayed the last page and then replayed the page before that.
Oh, so it was on like a loop.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because yeah,
so he goes down to come back to where he was before.
But it would have made more sense if it actually played it backwards.
Yeah, because he actually says go back, but he doesn't. He goes down. He doesn't go back.
There is a weakness in this episode whereby they kind of stumble across what they need to do, and then Data and Troy have this discussion, and it's like, wow, that's going to be really hard, right? Yeah. Oh, hang on a minute. No. We just have to say now.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit weird. You go from this, yeah. You know, how can we...
Also, isn't hydrogen one of the most abundant gases in the universe?
It might be the most abundant element in the universe, yeah.
So this alien ship has no access to the most abundant gas in the universe.
Also...
Give the Kazon a drink of water, would you?
I don't want to be rude.
Never got that.
But...
Spacefaring civilization that can't find water.
I'm starting to wonder if that was just on that planet. But anyway, sidecar, go on there, James.
Well, you can probably get a fair amount of hydrogen out of a person if you did boil them down. So, in the worst case scenario, you can get hydrogen in most from most compounds.
So, I mean, that green stuff she was like floating through. Wasn't the hydrogen in there? I mean, it looked pretty gassy.
I mean, almost anything that is organic will have hydrogen in it.
Yeah.
Almost without certainty. So, you know, water obviously has hydrogen in it, and, yeah, you know, baked Troy will have hydrogen in it. It's probably not as much hydrogen as they need. And I have, what's this idea about they run out of hydrogen? I mean, if we believe, again, this world where you can replicate material... You should be able to replicate the most elemental element in the universe, because it's, you know, it's the most trivial thing to replicate. So you should be able to pump it out.
Because they use the Bussard collectors to get hydrogen.
No, sure, but you should be able to replicate hydrogen.
No, but they can't replicate because the replicators are offline, remember?
Is that right? Okay.
Yes,
fine.
But if it's also abundant, how do they only have 30 seconds of it?
Also, hydrogen is not red, just to be... pedantic.
No.
I think the red was because the Bussard collector is red. So I think that's what it's showing that it's coming out of the Bussard collector. I think it was just like, so you know, it's come, I think it was just like, you know, a thing to show you it's being released from the Bussard collectors rather than hydrogen's red.
Actually, by the way, what was it supposed to be detonated with? Do you guys remember?
Anisium?
Inesium.
I mean,
inesium might actually be a thing.
I'm going to play that back and...
Really? Elysium's a thing? I did not know that.
It might be. It might not be.
Or it was Techno Babble.
No, it is not a thing, I'm afraid.
It's not a thing, okay.
I did manage... I didn't...
So it is Techno Babble.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, fine. Because I was about to announce... I mean, accuse them that... The way that it blows up, it kind of looks like it's blowing up in the presence of oxygen, which obviously wouldn't exist in outer space.
The explosion was the Genesis device.
Caledonium.
Caledonium.
Sorry to interrupt you while you guys were talking. I was actually listening to
the explosion was the Genesis explosion recycled.
Yeah.
Is it Hecadon?
Yeah. Or Genesis planet. Yes.
Yeah. But that's what the explosion is. It's recycled stock footage from the Genesis torpedo going off.
Yeah. He just says if it was mixed with another thing like caledonium, they could have used baking powder for all we know.
Yeah. So is caledonium a thing, James?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, here's another thing. All she had to say was now. So what's this? Where are you? I need to see.
I'd be shouting.
No! Fire! No. Fire! Come on, hit it! We got the hydrogen. We got what you wanted. Hit that button, boy.
That's so we could see that there was humanoid at the very end.
That's a good point. I have never seen that. I never noticed it was some kind of humanoid form.
Those are humanoid? No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
But I always thought that the payoff with the humanoid, and then also the payoff with... Is that supposed to be a starship that kind of flies off at the end?
Yes.
It looks like a little bit of a... It's like out of phase, and it's not clear enough to really see what's going on. I always thought they were slightly weak. I would prefer to have kind of been a mystery.
Well, the thing that got me with the end sequence is they trigger the explosion, they both escape, the Enterprise goes one way, the aliens go the other way. But, you know, obviously they both escaped the rift.
Yeah.
And then Data tells Picard to go to bed. Mm-hmm. But they don't try and initiate contact with the aliens.
Not even a passive scan.
Yeah. They're not even, like, send them a message to say thank you. Nothing like that. Even though they're the ones that basically turned everyone doolally in the first place and caused everyone on the Britannia to kill them each other.
Uh-huh.
But they don't hail these people and try and establish contact with them. They're just like, get us to Starbase. I'm going to bed. Good night.
Yeah. I got the impression they didn't even see them.
Well, the only one conscious was Data by that point.
No. No. During the explosion.
Well, in full control of his faculties, I should say. Not
right.
Conscious.
Yeah.
The only one in full control of his faculties was Data, so...
But I'm still surprised there was no mention what the ship's computer sensors recorded. Unless they were down.
Or no attempt to contact them or nothing like that.
Ah. Okay. Wow. So anyway, where were we here? Lost my spot again. So they got some hydrogen, the thing explodes, and now...
Everyone's going home.
So I wonder, here's one question. The alien on the other side of the rift, do you think they were all going crazy like the Britannia and the Enterprise? Or
no, because they were the ones sending people crazy.
You think
they were having good sleep?
Yeah, because it was their telepathic communications that were blocking REM sleep.
That makes no sense.
No, it doesn't. I thought it was the rift. But they kept saying, you know, rifts like these, nobody's experienced this before.
No, but Deanna actually says in the ready room that the aliens' telepathic communication is what's blocking everyone sleeping.
I wonder how she would know that.
She's a beta sonde.
And she might have read the plot.
That they dream at a different frequency.
Yeah. Huh. But I would have liked to see more of the alien ship. I think it was, you know... All it was just a light that came at you and went away. You didn't even see a side glimpse of the ship.
No.
But by the way, I didn't buy this idea that just because Betazoids happen to have a different frequency of REM sleep, it means that if you were to use it as a way of communication, you'd be blocking other people. Because, you know, when they say it's a frequency, all that they're saying is that it beats with a certain rhythm. That's really fundamentally all you mean when you're talking about frequency. So it's like saying that, you know, this dude's heart beats at a different frequency than mine, and as a result, his pacemaker causes my heart to stop. It doesn't quite, you know, I can't quite see how that would happen.
I don't see that either. But it's what was needed for the tech. Okay, guys. I don't know what else we have.
I think that's it.
Okay, then. It's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and very close to what it was, and 5 being the best in a different star system.
This was coming in at a 5 for me earlier today. I really was liking this, but then it drags at the end a bit, so I've had to reevaluate.
Oh. Okay.
What have you gone down to then, James?
I think I'm coming in... I really enjoy this episode for some reason. I have to admit that this is the point where I was watching TNG growing up. I was doing the run of season 4 and into season 5, and it was kind of, you know, this was my Star Trek that I kind of saw, you know, week on week. I think that how the story is done. Yes, it's a big bag of nonsense. Of course it is. But it's got a lot of things that stand out. Everyone knows the Troy scenes. I think it's clever enough in my mind that I give it a pass. I think that they keep the mystery quite well. I think they've got good performances in here. I don't know. I'm going to probably maybe shock everyone. I enjoyed this enough to give it a 4 out of 5.
Holy crap.
Colin, back me up.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to give it a 4 as well. So, yeah, I think in some instances it's mediocre, but in other instances there's enough of it to make me like watch it again. I mean, you know, the harness thing in the Hulk fart is funny and bad. You know, it's one of the moments where it's so bad it makes you smile, and it's so obvious in what's going on that she's in a harness and stuff like that. But it's also interesting that they actually use, to most intents and purposes, they use stuff that we can relate to. They don't fill this episode with technobabble. We know what REM sleep is, we know that hydrogen is, we know that hydrogen explodes. You know, there's a lot of stuff that a lay person can relate to. But there's also humor in there. I mean, there's Gone and Be Gone, there's Worf's ready-made suicide table, there's the snake, the man who's had probably got his snake out in bed more than anyone else, actually waking up and sleeping with snakes. There's Colin Meaney doing his best, you're seeing another man impression with Keiko, when basically she's just been playing with the plants. There's just lots of little elements that make it fun to watch. Yes, there's bad bits in it, but overall there's enough to keep you entertained. So yeah, I'd agree with James and give it a 4.
Now, actually, I have to say, just to pop in, sometimes people... One sign that I enjoyed the episode is how many times I've watched the episode. And I'm certain I've watched this in the many tens of times. This is an episode that I go back to quite a lot. If, you know, if I'm at that point in the season, or if I'm at that point on my hard disk and I say, oh, what should I watch? Night Terrors is a fun episode to watch. You clearly nothing goes on, and it's throwaway in a certain respect. But I've watched this so many times.
Huh.
So Lou, why are we wrong?
Do you remember what my thing was to give it a 4 and a 5? Do you remember? I've said it a few times.
No.
You said what you go to, you know, when you have this on your hard drive or something. Me,
In terms of you take it on your holiday.
Yes.
You take it on your route.
Yes. So yeah. If I play this one in the car, then it's one that I get into. I've never listened to this in the car, except for when I was delivering pizzas and I used to listen to them on cassette tape, believe it or not. I never listened to the radio or anything. I always had this on a cassette tape. Star Trek all the way. I'd start at the beginning and go to the end of All Good Things when I was delivering pizzas. This here, however, no, never. This is it's kind of an enigma to me, because on the one hand, it is pretty techie in a bit. It even involves humans in distress. On the other hand, as I said earlier, it sucks balls. I'm sorry, but I really don't have much to say about it. But in our 3.5 season run, I've given 1-star ratings to 2 episodes. That was Angel One and Shades of Grey. 1.5 went to Too Short a Season and Home Soil. But I've given plenty of 2-star episodes. Looking at Memory Alpha, as I read, even Jonathan Frakes hated this one. I don't think he liked it. He did say it was bad special effects, but a lot of the production crew acknowledged that it's crap. However, I won't give it a 1 or a 1.5. And it's not quite bad to deserve a 2, so I'm going to go generous and give it a 2.1. Okay. I dislike this episode. But it's not the worst that's been written, so I can't give it any a 1. But higher than a 2, that just... And James, let me ask you a question. When you were given your rating, I was actually pulling up Microsoft Excel so I could log it. Did you say 4 or 4.5?
Sorry, I've got the printer going again. I've just
You said 4.
It was,
but I don't do 0.5s.
Yeah, that's what I thought, and that's why I said that didn't sound right. So I wasn't quite listening at the time. I was trying to.
I mean, for the longest part, I was thinking, this is a 5-star episode. I enjoy it so much. I go back to it. It's a lot of fun. And then as I was watching it, in particular, the wrapping up of the episode, I think it does a good job at setting the scene. Much better than resolving it. But as they were resolving it, I was just sitting there thinking, no, this is a bag of nonsense, isn't it? but it still somehow keeps me happy. And you can't take that away from me, Lou.
No, I wouldn't even try. I won't try. Okay. Let's see here where we're at. Colin, I didn't ask this question earlier. Last time we had you was for Data's Day, and I don't have you on for the rest of the season, so.
No.
But since we know you're available on Wednesday nights, keep yourself on standby, because so far out of 17 episodes, we've not had one without a guest. And I hate for my new schedule to ruin that, because we were booked solid through the entire season. And I don't know of many Star Trek review podcasts that can say they've had a guest on for the entire run of a season.
Just give me enough notice then. Don't just like tell me Wednesday morning. I'm coming on Wednesday evening.
Yeah, something like that. So yeah, we have to fake it to make sure that we're full. We've only got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 episodes to go.
So when are you putting season 5 up for grabs?
10 episodes. It'll be here fairly soon. So, but.
Because there's some great episodes in season 5 I want
to. Oh, there are. Yeah, there are. And they usually go pretty darn quick, too, so.
Mm-hmm.
You'll okay. be surprised how quickly they go.
Oh, very quick. I mean, it's like, bam. It's like some people have it, you know, have it on their iPhones or something. As soon as this website alters in any way, alert me. If that's even possible. So, but anyway.
Well, I could check it periodically, so.
Right. Okay, guys. Well, thank you for coming on, Colin. James.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yep. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Take care, everyone.
An away team is vanishing one by one.
Whatever happened to the others is happening to me.
Susanna!
A deadly virus invades the last survivors.
We've got to get that thing out of her now.
Its next victim, Geordi LaForge.
You may have weeks or very few hours.
Security!
We have an intruder coming!
And all this is on the next exciting episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh, and join us next time for episode 18, and that's going to be Identity Crisis, and that's what I really like. So,
and that's a good one.
Is it? I thought, yeah, it is. Remember you said, I thought for some reason somebody didn't like it or something. And
we'll find out next week.
We'll find out next time. And Simon will be on for that. So, thanks, Colin. Everyone take care.
Thanks a lot.
And good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay, good night. And we're finished.
And we finished.